All right, good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 14 of the Nerd Cantina Show. Today we've got for you the next Cantina conversation with up-and-coming comic book writer Sean Mullen.
I had reached out to Sean basically because he's in part of our Facebook community, and I know he's a creator, and I have my own creations that I have brewing up in my head. And it started the conversation with him about how he got started. And by the third question, I kind of stopped and said, you know what? I'm sure there's some other listeners out there that would like this information also. So we decided to bundle this up into a Cantina conversation for everybody.
Yeah. So if you've ever had a good story that you thought maybe one day you want to tell, or you want to create something, whether it's a comic or a book, you may find an inspiration here in the sense that Sean has just taken those next steps. And he gives some tips on how he got started in the comic book industry, how he found himself an artist to work with, how that collaboration went. And then at the end of the episode, he does a little bit of a workshop with Steve on how he can maybe bring some of his ideas to life. Hope you enjoy the show. Stick around.
Calling back all nerds.
Nerds!
All right, nerds, welcome to the next Cantina conversation that we're going to have today here with Sean Mullen. What we're really trying to bring to our audience today is an interesting conversation surrounding a creator, right? Somebody who has written, who is actively trying to create. We haven't had that or featured that yet in the comic space, and looking forward to this conversation today with Sean. Sean, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to the audience?
How's it going? My name is Sean Mullen. I'm creator of Don't Feed the Wolf collective of works right now, but right now it's just The Wolf and Me, which I did with artist Davey Wagnerock.
How did you get kind of into moving into coming up with an idea and getting started?
So I had this story that I started, you know, maybe 2 years ago or so, and I started writing it out, and then I did everything but do anything with it. I just let it, like, that was one of the things, you know, if you want to talk about, one of the things I could talk about is pretty much doing everything but writing and creating.
then I guess let's go backward to the point of inaction, right? So have you always been a comic book fan?
Yeah, definitely. For me, it started with Transmetropolitan is one of my main big ones that I love to talk about. Why the Last Man?
That was on my intro to comics list, actually.
Yeah.
So I just wrote an article with another fellow podcaster, and it was all what you should start reading to get people into comics. And yeah, Why the Last Man was on there.
That's definitely, yeah, those are definitely great introductions to comics. I think there's people that they may not be avid comic readers and they'll get into something like that. So it's a good way to kind of, like, you know, hook them on the drug.
Yeah, no, I was in a book club, and every person got to pick a book each month, you know, so it was my turn to pick a book, and I made everyone read the first 12 issues of Why the Last Man.
Hell yeah.
And made the entire book club read it, and they loved it.
Sweet.
Yeah, you know, and these are people who only read novels and things like that, and everyone thought it was a great story. Many of them continued to read it up until, you know, issue 50 or 60 when it ends, and yeah, it was a good story.
Yeah, and a lot of people's perception of comics is that it all falls in this superhero realm. Were you always drawn to the, you know, outside of the traditional?
Yes,
DC, Marvel?
Definitely. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong, growing up as a kid, like, I've always known about all the superheroes from Marvel and DC, you know, and been fans of them. I probably watched more cartoons than I did read those books. I got into comics, you know, at an older age. And I've always been drawn into the more, you know, when I got into comics, it's because, like, I was exhausted by everything else that was on TV, cartoons, whatever, like, media-wise. And I saw comics and I started reading these stories and I was like, there's a lot of really fresh and raw, you know, material here. Like, raw stories, fresh stories. Like, this is different than anything else that I have been experiencing anywhere else. I mean, now some of the stuff's starting to come to the screen as well and other forms of entertainment. But, like, when I got into comics, it's like there was nowhere else to get these kinds of stories. And I love the freedom of that format for telling a story.
When you first got back into comics, when people decide they want to get into the business, most people's first reaction is to start drawing. What made you go more towards the writer side? Was it the the fact that you like the storytelling of comics, or, you know,
or you just can't draw.
I just can't fucking draw.
it's a little bit of both, you know. Like, I mean, I'm not going to say that I can draw. I have it in my head. I can see exactly what I want, and my hands cannot do that, and so it's just way too frustrating. I can describe the scene, I can build it up, and I can work great with an artist on creating it, but I cannot do it myself, and I don't have, you know, and I'm just now, you know, I'm over 30 years old. Like, I feel like it'd be silly of me to waste time or spend time trying to learn how to draw when I recognize what my strengths are, which is writing and storytelling, and I'm just diving into that and trying to bring that to the table.
No, I'm very sympathetic to that.
I wish I could draw. Like, every time I, you know, go and look around, like, and I see the rates that artists are charging, and like, I'm like, God, I could do that. You know, I could tell my own story as well, like, not have to rely on somebody, and then I could also make a little money on commission on the side. Like, I get excited, you know, like, I wish I could draw, to be honest, you know.
Well, it's always the art that draws me to the book, but it's the writing that makes me love the
yes.
book. So that's one of the reasons why I gravitate more towards the creative writing aspect. And again, I can't draw for shit. Never really had the urge to attempt to learn either. But yeah, you have that creative mind. You still want to put your vision out there. You just need somebody else to use the tools to put it on paper.
Yeah. So the first step then is basically towards getting to where, you know, I am now, and I'm still, you know, in the beginning phases of my works and whatnot. But like, the first step was studying the talent, studying what's already out there, and just, you know, justifying my endless hours spent reading and watching other people's, you know, stories.
Is that to make sure that you don't want to do a story that somebody else has done? Are you doing that research based on you want to make sure you have your own space in the medium, or is it to draw other inspirations or
yeah, whatever? to draw inspirations and see what works and what doesn't work. I'm not too worried about like somebody else's story being like similar or this or that, like, not in the sense, because like, I mean, even, you know, I play music too. Even if I try and cover somebody's song, I'm going to do it my own way. I'm not going to copy anybody else's or do it like somebody else's. I kind of have my own voice. So I'm not too worried about like putting out something identical to what somebody else is doing. That's definitely not an issue, but it's more of just like, I'm trying to study and see like, oh, this is what works, or I like this idea, or maybe to like grab something from somebody else and build off of that idea. Like, oh, I wish they would have explored more with this element that was just like a little tiny mechanic in their story or something. Like, for instance, with The Wolf in Me, I took the mechanic from American Werewolf in London, where once a wolf kills somebody, that person kind of haunts them. And I built off of that, and I created a whole story using that mechanic. And I also set my own rules for that mechanic. You know, I didn't want them to slowly be deteriorating away like they do with American Werewolf in London. I wanted them to stay in the way that they were when they were killed. So they're still kind of looking, you know, they're messed up, but they're not just slowly turning into a skeleton and this and that. But so, yeah, like, that's what I guess, yes, it's more just, like I said, studying other people's works and getting ideas and building my own from those ideas.
Yeah, you pulled the inspiration a little bit, like you said, American Werewolf in London. And once you kind of have that idea, do you kind of lay out almost like in novel format that, hey, you've got your whole story and how you want to tell it, or did you come at it right away that, okay, this is what I want issue one to look like, this is what I want number two to look like, and you kind of go into it with a strategy like that?
So in the beginning, I did just try and just write it out like a freaking novel, and I it's honestly, I mean, if that works for you, that works for you. I heard, you know, Tarantino will write things out like in a novel kind of first and then turn it to a script. One thing that has really helped me recently was another writer that I know. Basically what he does is he showed me these beats, you know, he does these beat sheets, and that kind of really helps. And that's now what I do, is I just actually start writing out what I want to happen in beats. And I don't necessarily limit it to like, this is what should happen in one issue or not. Like, I just kind of start writing out those scenes in order and kind of building it, and then I work off of that while I'm writing my script. Does that make sense? Or
yeah, no, it's interesting.
Yeah, so like it's kind of like, you know, yeah, it's like your blueprint, your foundation, you know, and it also makes it easy too when you're in the mood for brainstorming ideas to not get so caught up with format or worrying about the length of each part. Like when you're writing these little paragraphs and these beats, like, you know, one could be four sentences long, one could be a sentence long. It doesn't matter. Don't concern yourself or waste time worrying like how many pages that section should be or whatever. Like you'll do that later. You'll figure that out. Like I say, just start writing it out, the story, like almost like you're doing like a short, quick story or like the whole thing, going through like a, you know, a Wikipedia like synopsis or something, but just start kind of like, okay, then this is going to happen, then this is going to happen. And you build from there. And then once you have that laid out, as you're writing the story, at least for me, like I start building off of it and adding more and getting more into the nitty gritty of it. And then going back to and finding ways, cause I like to make things connect to every little thing. I want to connect and come back and I foreshadow and do all this. Yeah. It's just a great way to start, build off of.
Okay. And then, you know, your webtoon, doesn't, you know, kind of have a like comic book panel appearance. So once you start getting into the actual issue writing, are you writing it as, I want this image going along with this text, or this, you know, panel in the upper right, I want this center, you know, center left, I want this type of image
from
to go
with
my story.
What I know of comics, that's usually up to the artist, is it not?
It actually goes back and forth. It depends. Now, I'm working on a physical book right now, or a couple, and another person that I'm working with, he's published multiple, and he writes them out, the panels. Now, you don't necessarily say where those panels go, but like, let's say we, you know, and we use Writer Duet, which has like a graphic novel format. And one of the things it does for you is it lists the top, and it automatically does, it lists out how many panels. So if like one page is a splash page, you know, or one page has like five panels or seven or whatever, it lists up at the top how many panels. And then you separate and organize those like panel one, and you write what's going on in it. But you don't really necessarily say, you know, yeah, like I'll list out those panels and what I want in those panels, but I still leave that freedom for the artist to figure out, like, maybe what I might write out what I want in one panel, the artist will go, you know what, like, we should split that into two or something like that. So you still want to leave some freedom, but it's just really with the script, it's a way for you to kind of communicate to the artist and give them the ideas of what you're looking for as best you can and make it easy for them to read. And then, but like, you also, at least with my experience, you want to trust the artist's eye too. Like they're going to usually figure out the best way to organize these things, you know, and make it work. Like they understand it a lot better, as far as like composition and symmetry and all that.
And you said you're able to do this within a computer program?
Yeah. So it's free, or you can do the paid version, which I do, because then you can, multiple people can share and there's other added features. But it's just writerduet.com. And the browser version has version 5 right now, which has a graphic novel format. Automatically does the formatting for you. Makes it so easy. I can share, you know, like with you guys, like PDF examples, kind of show you my script, especially like the Wolf one, you know, for instance, so you can kind of compare. Or I could also show you too with like one of the physical books that we're working on, like just, you can kind of see how it lines up.
Yeah, no, that's interesting, because I know a lot of art now is moving to digital, and there are a lot of artists. I have a personal friend who, yeah, he draws on a tablet now. He doesn't draw on paper, you know. So I was always wondering how technology was going to drive some of the comic book industry in the future. You know, if we're still just going to have people drawing on giant splashboards, or if the next generation is going to be kind of tablet.
I'm not an artist, so I don't want to get too much into it, but from what I know and what I've read and from my friends who are artists, a lot of them still recommend that you start off just pencil, paper, working with those traditional mediums before you move to a tablet. But everything now is pretty much, you know, is using both, really, or just, you know, working on the digital.
Okay. So, you know, obviously, a big part of then your Wolf and Me project, and then every project you plan on doing as a future as a writer is going to hinge on the strength of kind of your artists and your letterers. How did you get linked up with your current artist, and how do you really make sure that you and the artist are in line with the vision of what you want to achieve?
The first thing I will say is one thing to avoid, and I'm only recently trying to use this service for creating a logo, is Fiverr. Like I've had the worst experience with that ever.
we have a Fiverr logo.
I can't imagine you want to do that for an entire so comic run.
That's on my mind right now because I've been working on this logo. So besides that, the Facebook groups, there's these Facebook groups that I'm a part of, and you know, there's connecting comic book writers and artists, comic book creator opportunities or something. And there's incredible, incredible talent on there, a really wide range of talent. And I mean, all different levels and skills, and it really does help. And for me, like, what I do is I joined those groups, you know, 3 years back or like a while back. And I wasn't even, you know, I was just kind of keeping an eye before I even started doing anything. But once I started like seeing different art that spoke to me, I started reaching out and talking to those people and just trying to get a rough estimate on like how much it was going to cost or this or that. And that's how I found the artist for The Wolf in Me. Was he did some art that kind of reminded me a little bit of Tarantino. And I was like, okay, so we started talking, and that's when I just knew, like, through our conversations and also his art, like his art spoke to me, but also through our conversations, I had a feeling that was like, we kind of speak the same language. I think we can work well together. And I got pretty lucky there with that.
Yeah. The Wolf and Me, the art and the way it appears and flows, it's really, really visually catching.
Thank you.
It's well done. Now, so let's go through, you've got a story in your mind. You've written your basic outline, you've written kind of where you want to go, and you've linked up with an artist. Your choice of medium, right? Webtoons. What drove that decision? Why going through there?
It was actually my artist's idea to go with Webtoons, and I'm very thankful that he introduced me to that medium, because it definitely saved a bunch of money for my first try. Like I worked with the artist, and we put in our time and money into creating that, the comic, but at least we didn't have to worry about the overhead or the cost of publishing and, you know, distributing and all that other stuff. So it cut out those factors. Now, the thing with Webtoon is it's like, you know, if you go on there, there's a lot of, it's kind of, you know, it came from Asia, so it's almost more anime, manga style driven. So we worked with that a little bit, and you know, I'm definitely, especially now after that, I'm really craving more Western style, but it still was an awesome experience. And I thought too, at the time, like I figured, you know, to take this dark story that I had and put it in like a kind of like almost cutesy looking comic, but it still gets, you know, it still has its moments. Like I thought it'd be a funny contrast to mix the two, and also to introduce a different kind of audience to something they're probably not used to looking at. That was also probably why, you know, it didn't do as well as it could have. But it's still, you know, I'm still not done with Webtoons. And I actually went out to their headquarters in Los Angeles and talked with them. And I now have a really good idea on, I feel like, how to get a more successful Webtoon. And I'm going to try something new, another story on that platform. But I'm also craving that physical.
Okay. Breaking into the physical, I completely understand the cost-cutting need, especially as you're starting and you're honing in. Shipping costs alone can run you bankrupt before you get started in the physical world. So Webtoons being a good medium, as far as the progression, you said you're going to continue with Webtoons, but to get to that physical space, what do you think it looks like for you as an independent writer now trying to work your way in?
As an independent writer, so as far as once we get the, you know, it created and we're ready for, you know, distributing, publishing or whatever, I'm fortunate to know, you know, another writer, again, who's published some works, and he's already done it. And we're probably going to go, you know, more than likely going to go a Kickstarter route to get it. And that's probably the best way that's the best way I probably recommend for anybody for now. I know some people are still kind of, there's definitely been some weirdness towards Kickstarter. People are saying it's just not as good as it used to be or this or that, but I still also am also hearing on the other side, I still see people doing well with Kickstarters. So,
yeah, I recently read an article about the comic book industry as a whole, and they were saying that comic book sales as a whole last year increased if you factor in Kickstarter and you factor in some of these outside mediums. Like the comic book stores are still struggling, but there are newer comics and stuff, and because of the mediums like Kickstarter, comics are still being consumed and purchased. It's just not through the traditional means.
I've definitely found some really awesome and creative stories and great creators like through Kickstarter that, yeah, if we weren't living in this digital age and we didn't have these tools available to us, like I never would have seen these things in a comic shop or anywhere else, you know, for that matter. And I never would have met some of the people that I know now, like, because, you know, they lived on the other side of the state or other side of the country, I mean, or other side of the planet.
And we have for next week an interview set up with a Felipe Cagno who just finished his second successful Kickstarter campaign with his series finale on The Few and Cursed. And we'll probably dive in pretty deep as far as his experience with Kickstarter running two independent campaigns. But it's a really unique model in the sense that you can run a Kickstarter per issue, per episode. So you don't even, you can essentially get each and every run or each and every issue funded before you have to commit any money to it. It is, I think, for somebody like in your position, new comic writers and illustrators that might be listening, it still serves as a great medium. Maybe it's not as great as it once was, but it's still an opportunity that doesn't exist elsewhere.
Yeah, and you find your audience, right? You know, so these your success is based on whether, you know, it's a lot of validation, kind of, in that sense, that if your Kickstarter gets funded, well, I must be onto something. I had X amount of people willing to put dollars down, and you know, now in your future endeavors, you kind of have like an audience, especially if you're successful.
That's a big point right there, and definitely a big key word too is that finding your audience. That's one of the things that I think, you know, something I would tell anybody out there who's thinking of doing anything is to not feel like you need to, you know, create this or that because this is what everybody else is doing, or just also understand that, like, we do live in this new age with, it's a digital age where we actually, you can find your audience. There's so many people on this planet, so many people with so many different interests. It's just a matter of time of finding and building an audience.
Yeah. That was the justification for starting a podcast is, you know, we live in a digital world. I'm not trying to take down the Joe Rogans of the world, but there's 7.5 billion people on the planet. I might be able to scoop a 1/10,000th of a percentage point. You know, you put this out in a digital world. It's literally the entire world. So, you know, it all depends on what your personal goals are and whatnot. But you know, you do have access to a lot of opinions, a lot of minds, and it's not hard to build that loyal following nowadays as it was back.
Yeah, you know, you're definitely, you know, you're not even having to compete with somebody like Joe Rogan. If anything, too, it's like, you know, you could actually end up getting some of those fans. Like, you know, there's different people with different interests, especially with him. He did a good way of combining a bunch of different interests all into one. You know. And yeah.
So what's, you know, you talk about on your website, you know, don'tfeedthewolf.com, you'll start kind of giving updates on what's coming next as you've finished up The Wolf and Me. You said maybe webtoons for your next endeavor. Do you have you already have your outline, your Wikipedia style outline for what's coming up?
I already have a script written for the first season of a new webtoon that we're working on right now. And we want to get far enough ahead before we do release anything. And we're planning to start releasing new episodes for that September of this year. And then I have another short story that I'm doing. It's a physical book. It's actually really cool. I can't give away any details with that. But it's
oh yeah, absolutely.
There's I'm combining there's let's just say there's a more than, you know, there's there's like 3 to 4, maybe more heads involved in this thing. And it's going to be a really cool combination of different talents. And we're doing something a little bit different. It's not something that hasn't completely never been done before. It's been done, but you don't see it that often. So that's why I'm kind of, you know, I don't want to say too much more about it. But I did put up a preview for that cover of my story. That's on my, it's on the Facebook group for Don't Feed the Wolf. You know, I should send you guys a copy of that. That cover was done by Michael Yakutis, and really a talented artist, really insanely talented.
Well, remember in the Facebook group, Tuesday Self-Promotion Tuesday, whatever you're posting on your page, you should be hell posting yeah. in ours on Tuesday.
Hell yeah. I didn't even, yeah, definitely. I'm down. I'll put it in there. but so yeah, so that's really exciting. And, yeah, I can't wait for that. Especially too, I can't wait to have a physical book under my belt, you know, and actually be able to say like I published something on Webtoons, but I want to be able to say I'm a published writer, and that physical book is, you know, it's a nice step closer. And I'd be definitely happy to talk more about that process once it's done. You know, if you ever want to have me back for that. To talk about what it was like actually printing and publishing and doing all that stuff and how Kickstarter went, yada yada.
Oh, for sure. You know, I just recently dipped my toe in the creator realm. We started the website about a year ago, and now we've been doing the podcast almost 3 months. When I first started writing the reviews and putting things up on the website, even just having like 50 people read it felt like a very rewarding thing, you know, to take your thoughts, put it out in the world, have anybody receive it and, you know, receive it positively. How rewarding has that sensation been for you? Is it, you know, I find it very almost therapeutic to just get these things out of your head and then put it out there. And it is kind of a scary thing, especially at first. How's that scenario for you?
That's something that I was going to bring up. That's, you know, talking about motivating yourself to kind of start creating and get ideas, it really does help. One, once you get, you know, somebody that you're working with, another person, you know, and you feed off each other, that's an awesome energy. Two, once you get to that point where you are getting things out there, and especially that's what's kind of cool about Webtoon, it's good and a bad thing, but like, I'll just get into the good for now about that, is like, the cool thing with Webtoon is you're publishing each piece by piece, and you're putting it out there as you're working on the project. And it's really cool to start getting that feedback, because that actually too, you know, is very motivating. And you know, it can be, it could also be bad, right? If it doesn't, if it's not received well, but like, it's definitely something, you know, I've wrote for a long time. I've always had these ideas, and I've always talked about all these great ideas and things I want to do. And I've always been that person who we could sit around with a bunch of friends, you know, and talk about these awesome ideas. And I never did anything with them. So it felt really great to start moving away from being that person who's just always talking about, I want to do this, I want to do this, to somebody who's actually doing. And that was a great feeling. But then to get reception from other people, and actually to have like a good reception and people to understand kind of the story or what I'm telling, that was cool. Because, you know, sometimes I feel like I think I'm entertaining or I'm funny or this or that, but like, it's not until you start really hearing from an audience outside of your close friends, you know, or peers.
Yeah. We all live in our own personal bubbles, and you gotta put it outside of your bubble.
Yeah, exactly.
To get the verification. Grandma's always going to call you a handsome little boy.
Exactly. And it's also too, you may talk about an idea or something that you're doing with, or show something to a friend, and they may know what you're trying to do with it because you've been talking about it so long, but it's actually way more beneficial for somebody who doesn't know anything about it to look at it and give you a viewpoint, because that'll let you know whether or not you're doing a good job of conveying the message or story or whatever you're trying to convey, because your friend or family or somebody else that's close to you, or even the people that are working on it with you, they have that tunnel vision. They know where you're going with it. But you need to get that outside perspective of that blank slate and see how they respond as well. And that's kind of, you know, it's fun in itself.
So how long did you focus group Wolf and Me with everybody at every bar that you got five drinks into.
To be honest, that would have been it would have been a smart thing to do. I just freaking we just ran with it. I think I've gotten now, maybe because of just running with it, especially because getting used to like getting that feedback and stuff from like webtoons. Now with some of my other stuff, I am kind of sharing ideas with like close friends, people that I know, and this and that, just little tidbits, and like running things by them to see how what they think of it, engage their reaction. But yeah, I definitely, with the wolf in me, it's something I just, we just ran with it. I had this thing, and yeah.
I don't talk about many of my personal ideas, just because me and my old roommate Stu, I have this kind of like Nerdstradamus thing going, where if I say it out loud, it's eventually gonna come to fruition, and I just feel like such a waste when it does, and I have these good ideas, and so like there's even moments where like I'll start to say something and my buddy Stu will look at me and be like, shut the fuck up, don't, just stop, just write it down, put it in an envelope, don't say it out loud, because we swear I'm bugged.
You talk about just running with the comic, just. For anybody who's considering kind of running in that same direction towards webtoons like you did, was there cost associated with you getting started?
There definitely was, but it wasn't as expensive as it could have been, especially now. Like, I have a really good grasp on the cost of the art that I like. I luckily found somebody who also had never done it. Who'd always wanted to do, he's had tons of, the artist that I worked with before, Davey Wagnerock, he's now working for Level 99 Games. Like, he does a lot of tabletop games art and stuff like that, but he's never done comics. So I got lucky that he was trying something new too, but he had a bunch of experience in just creating art. And so we more collaborated together. And now if you can find that, obviously, that's probably the best way to start, is to find somebody you can collab with, because then you're just costing your time. It's both of your time and effort.
Yeah, and that's where I was trying to find out was did you cost yourself really anything but time? Because then that's time well spent. You're honing your craft. So just running with it, yes, and just saying, hey, let's see what happens. No harm, no foul there. If you're committing a couple grand to just run with an idea, maybe you focus group something and put a little more time, I guess, up front on the front end to definitely just make sure that the idea is viable. But webtoons being, again, you said, if you found an artist, through these Facebook groups or whatever else that was willing to also test their ability, hone their craft and collaborate, really the cost to be kept pretty minimal.
It's definitely, it's not for everyone. And there are a lot of artists too, that, I mean, they've been basically, they've been working for free for a long time, or they probably always have had people constantly want to do things with them. So it's like, you really have to, but if you got to find somebody who's on the same page too, and somebody, you need to find somebody that believes in it as much as you do. But I mean, if you can afford anything, like I would, I think it's good to have at least a little bit of like payment or some kind of payoff or something, you're contributing like the lettering or coloring or whatever, so you both are working on it too at the same time. Because obviously you spent a lot of time and you're going to spend a lot of time writing it, but once you do and you have the story written, like, hey, you can also spend time revising it up until the point that they start creating it. The draft's never final, but still, like, they're going to spend a lot of time doing that art. And, if you can help cut them down on some of that time or compensate them in some way or work with them, then that's highly recommended for this, because they could, they could start off with a lot of steam and be down to go with you on this project, and then they could start losing that steam fast.
And I know a lot of artists get underappreciated in just the art industry in general. I know there's a big push amongst a lot of artists to not enter these submit your art contests for, like, companies like Pepsi even, and it's like, hey, artists, want to be featured on the Pepsi wall, submit your art and blah blah blah, and it's like, why are you working for a multi-million dollar company for free? You have a talent, it is obviously sought after, why would you give these people something for free? And there's a big push by artists because many people think that it's just hey man, you draw me a mermaid real quick, something, you know, like, draw my next, you know, they every tattooist I'm sure has had a dozen friends ask to draw their next tattoo for free and things like that. And it is very, they often go very undervalued.
Yeah, no, it's a big thing. And I also too, I mean, you know, the artist that I'm working with right now on the next webtoon, he was telling me some horror stories about like some companies that he's worked for too, that like, you know, cause he lives in Brazil and they like, you know, they're not paying him and he's already done the work. And like, so there's horror stories of that stuff happening too, where the people are promised certain things and then they're not given it. And I come from a working class family and a working class background. The one thing that pisses me off more than anything is hearing about anybody who's worked hard and earned something and then they're not paid for it or compensated. Like hearing about anybody, you know, that's a whole thing we can get into and I can go on and on. I'm very passionate about, and I feel that way for artists. Like they definitely do deserve their pay and they deserve to be taken care of. And that's why, you know, it's like there's some artists that I wish I could work with and I wish I could afford, but I would never, and that's the thing, I would never feel confident or comfortable taking anything from them for free. Like I just, you know, I feel like the artist should be paid and taken care of. And I feel like it's a really big, important aspect of it. And it's about showing respect for each other and their work.
I have two friends that work for Marvel, and one is at the top tier and the other one is at probably, you know, a mid tier. And it is reward, you know, good to see them get rewarded for their talents, you know, but they both have worked very, very hard, have put in thousands of hours of their time and sweat into craft, you know, honing their craft and getting better and taking the rejections and taking the shit jobs. And, you know, when they do succeed, it is very, you know, I like to see them succeed like that. I think art goes in general, writing, drawing, music. I think society doesn't really put a proper value on art
and
nowadays.
At the same token too, I mean, writing's definitely, you know, pretty under fucking appreciated and as far as like that goes. But in this, with this aspect, you know, like for the most part, yeah, the thing is, the difference is like we're trying to create it too, and it's like it's our thing, so it's like, yeah.
And you ain't doing it for the fame, let's be honest. Like,
yeah, I mean, for me, man, it's just about, you know, it's keeping something, creating something that could outlive myself, you know, and it doesn't need to reach any fame, but I mean, like, hey, like, maybe even somebody in my family could discover this freaking random book that I had, you know, created like down the road, you know, years after.
No, it's very human to want to leave a niche in the wood of life, you know, just leave your notch and let that stay there long after you're gone. I think it's a very human thing. I think anybody can relate to that.
I think one thing that might be fun to do here is maybe, Sean, if you could workshop a little bit for Nerdstradamus, and let's, you know, we won't have him say his ideas out loud, right? Because somebody will steal it.
It'll be a TV show in 2 years if I say this shit.
But kind of as a tutorial, we'll use Nerdstradamus here. We'll use Steve as the guinea pig. But really, any independent, you know, writer, somebody who was kind of at your point that you were talking about before, at in action.
Yeah, right now I have a story where I want it to start, where I want it to, you know, so I have about 24 issues, you know, a 12-issue story arc and then another 12-issue story arc kind of that I'd like to do. And I have my first beginning of the first 12 and the end of the 12, and then I have the beginning of the first set, and I don't know how I want that set to end yet. But yeah, it's a lot of, you know, I'm going to have to create characters. I'm going to have to create dialogue. I'm going to have to, you know, so once you have I have the meat, you know what I mean, of what the story's going to be, it's very kind of like, well, now what? You know, like, do I sit and just write character names and try to think of personalities? Do I, you know, the field's wide open and you don't know what path to first take.
It can be really, sometimes it can be, there's a lot of like little traps or ways that you can like lose motivation, or it can become overwhelming. Like you said, like thinking about character names, right? Now, I mean, I definitely have fun with it, and I hide like little secret messages and stuff, and maybe some of the names that I create and the reason why I put them together and why they're named this and that. But that, you know, it can also, you know, and then sometimes too, I just give people like a basic name, but like I start with not even thinking about their names, because it can just, I don't know. And sometimes too, you hear a certain name like Robert Downey Jr., you know, or just whatever, like you hear a name and like already there's so much associated with that name. And maybe too, if you ever, you know, you have a sibling, whatever it's. So I just start with like, start thinking about your characters without even their names. Just start like, kind of like, what do you want to do with those characters? As far as the story goes, but then also give those characters, you know, yeah, like goals and desires and just needs that are going to drive the story, but all, and create opposition. But like, it's also, yeah, it just kind of, you want to start that way thinking about as the story itself. But then I think it's important too, to like, as you start creating those characters, to try and let them have a life of their own and not 100%, you know, make sure everything is in lines with the story, because if it becomes too obvious that that character was created just to drive your plot, people will pick up on that, you know, and they'll know. So you got to be careful about that. Like, you definitely, you want things to happen. You want the story and the plot to move forward, but you can't just like, if it's real obvious, like a character just shows up at the right time and hands your character something to advance them to the next stage or whatever. It's like, oh, that whole person's existence revolved around that little moment of being there just for your character. And people will call bullshit. People are pretty smart viewers these days. And then they're also still, you know, can be pretty silly and not catch on.
And that's my concern is, I know, you know, I write movie reviews and TV show reviews and things like that. So I'm very critical when it comes to plot holes, you know, lazy writing, and things like that, that really make a bad movie a bad movie, or, you know, whatnot. So to try to tackle that realm and put myself out there for the same criticism I give others, yeah, it's a very daunting thing.
What helps for me is like, too, is I just, you know, it's a lot of people do this, is don't be afraid to, when you find things that are interesting about people that you're talking with or around, or, you know, to sneak those into that character and give that character dimensions with it. You know, I kind of, that's one way that it helps. Like, it makes those characters feel real and it brings them to life, is I put people into those characters or parts of myself or whatever, you know. And I just like, if I go to the bar and I'm having a conversation with somebody, like there was some girl that was freaking talking about how much she weighed, but then she said minus, like, what was it, 30 pounds or I don't know what. And she said for her head, because she knew how much her head weighs, like without her body. Like, I was like, just my mind went all kinds of crazy directions. And I was like, that's interesting. That's weird. I'm going to put that down. And I might, you know, save that, either my reaction to it or just how she was, or both, you know, and put those into a character. Kind of putting in and sprinkling in that kind of spontaneity and like those kind of interactions and whatnot. It's definitely, it gives it more depth.
Well, I equate a lot of that to, like, so I have a lot of tattoos, and they're not, it's not a flowing thing. It's like a tattoo here, a tattoo there, and I'm working on a sleeve. So I know everything that I want is like the big pieces, you know, and my tattoo artist is telling me like, well, we got to figure out what we want to fill in the gaps with. And that's where I lose the creativity, you know, is like, where you fill in the gaps. So you have a lot of these main things. How do you figure out how to fill in those gaps?
Yeah. I mean, that's just, let's see. I mean, that's what I was trying to share, is a little bit of like, that's my, you know, that's where those gaps come from. Is just pulling that.
Just pull in.
Like, I mean, I don't know, when I'm sitting down and I'm writing a scene, like I will speak out loud. I kind of like, I really try and get in it. And, you know, I like to think about what I would do in that scene, but then at the same time, I'm like, this is not about me. This is, you know, what would that character do? Like, you know, what would they do in that? And, but I also, you know, I think that it's, I like my little personal flair or technique is, you know, I just have these off the wall kind of, you know, people will call them like shower thoughts or high thoughts or whatever word you want to use for it. But like, I think about things and I reflect on them in weird ways. So sometimes I like to, like, you know, maybe I'll give a character that I can use that with and have this kind of pop up and just kind of like have like a silly it seems like a silly conversation, but somehow it's like, you know, it's part of the story. Or, you know, like I had another character that was like very, I used him to channel out my kind of soapbox, you know, my mentality of like wanting to just preach and tell people about this and that, you know? So like you give these little aspects to these characters and it gives them depth. And then you figure out, like, at first maybe it's just random shit, but then you're saying or you're putting in, or but then you realize like how to later on as you're working on it, how to kind of make it flow with the story or keep it relevant or whatnot, you know, and while also giving depth to that character.
You didn't go to school for writing or anything, right?
No, I had some college, you know. It's writing something that I've just done for myself for a long time, but yeah.
Was there any, you know, I guess kind of books or YouTube channels or anything that you really pulled from that kind of talked or helped you frame your own kind of creative process or anything?
Yes, that really... The Screenwriter's Bible is a really big one that I really like. And it's, you don't have to use that just for, you know, it's not just for movie scripts. It's like, it's really good. It really has a lot of, it works like a workshop thing, as well as you can also use it later to come back to like get ideas for formatting and how you would write out certain things for a script, which you could use for a film script or a comic script. Cause it'll tell you, like, you know, if somebody's talking a certain way, or, you know, let's, like, how would you format that? But a lot of that book, it goes through and it talks about, like, a lot of films that you know and, like, you grew up with, especially if you get more recent versions of it. And it'll explain to you, like, okay, so this is the climax. This is how this works. Here's where how they did it in this film. Here's the big event, you know. Here's the this and that, like, the... and it just keeps going through those little parts. So it really gets you a good idea on like how you should structure your story. Honestly, too, like figuring out. So once you figure out like that, how to structure the story and hit those notes, you can then kind of figure out little stuff. You can think of a ways to like fill the in between. Is you can figure out like little events you want to have happen that may foreshadow an event that's happening later. It may set up more of a background on that character and why they're going to behave a certain way later or do something. There's all kinds of, that's what you can do. Those little filling in the gaps is all about like either giving more backstory and depth to a certain character, or foreshadowing something later, or yeah, or just setting up and like this character's arc, you know, there's all kinds of little things like that that you can really put in there and come up with clever, fun ways to do that. If that makes sense.
No, yeah. Definitely does. Well, I think we did a good amount on, you know, trying to get people to encourage people to be creators. That's what I hope at least people get out of this show, is that if you have ideas, if you have, you know, thoughts, if you, you know, are an avid movie watcher, TV show watcher, comic book reader, and you have ideas that you know, you don't think anybody else has done, or you would have done something totally differently, that you should pursue these thoughts. You should pursue that creative instinct in your body. You should go forward with these things. We live in a day and age where it's very easy now to put yourself out there. You have kids making $10 million a year playing with toys. Like, what the fuck are you doing sitting on your couch? Like, get out there, do something. You know, it's very rewarding to put your thoughts out into the ether and to have people receive it and just get any kind of feedback. You know, like we said earlier, there's 7.5 billion people out there. Someone might enjoy it. Someone's gonna like it. Don't doubt that a whole yeah. bunch of people won't give a fuck either. But you might find a handful of people that really appreciate having your thoughts out there, and that's a definitely very rewarding
thing. Also, two things. One, I mean, I'm one of those people, man. I binge the hell out of freaking TV and movies and stuff, like, you know, and it's, but I still, I'm very selective with what I watch, and I try and, you know, justify it because I'm like, I'm studying for, you know, ideas on like how I want to, like, this is what's good, this is, you know, and this and that for what I want to do. But then the other thing is, you know, one thing I haven't, I've done one other podcast. One thing I haven't revealed yet. One thing that I did before I started writing the story and I started writing the story and then I let it sit for, you know, a year or two. And in between that time, I actually played Grand Theft Auto 5 RP. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. And I was an admin on a server. Like, I got really fucking deep, like, you know, a pretty decent sized server. And but like getting involved with that really helped me build characters and dialogue and improv and just kind of throw myself into a scene and build a scene, because like I got used to that, like that just creating. That's one other little thing that I did. And but again, like I said, I did a bunch of things but writing for the longest time, but actually doing anything. I understand anybody else who's in that point. I'm sure somebody else will get it and they know exactly what I'm talking about. If you have these ideas, you want to do something, like, but you just keep on doing everything else but that thing, like, I'm right there with you. It still is a struggle that I, you know, have to go through, and I still, you know, constantly have to keep pushing myself. And I don't know, you know, like if it goes anywhere with it, I'm sure it'll still be a daily struggle. Like every day, there's always going to be distractions.
Well, and a lot of our listeners and readers and stuff of our, are in our generation, you know, we're, Ken's in his early 30s. I'm in my late 30s. So we all have children that like to create too. You know, this is an opportunity to know, encourage even your kids. You got a 12-year-old that likes to draw, have them start creating something. You got a child that likes to tell stories and has a vivid imagination, man, take some notes, write them down. Like it's not just, you know, I think for people, everyone to internalize, but a lot of us do have creative kids, and their brains are sponges. So if you want to even take these lessons today and apply them to a third party,
yeah, that's, I think, a goes big, a actually good, a great point. If I was younger, like if I was in high school or junior high, middle school, I wish that I was during this time right now. I think that would be a great time to get into like webtoons, for instance, and be creating with like your friends and just slowly start kind of getting used to that. I would like, and I definitely, if you're younger too, I would highly recommend working on, if you want to get into comics or anything like that, just start trying to work on drawing. Like, see if you can, you know, if you can pick that up. I think, because if you do that, it's going to really help you in the long run. Even if you don't end up wanting to be the full-time illustrator or whatever, at least if you can create on your own, you'll have to rely on way less people and way less money and resources. Like, you have a really great foundation, and you'll have so much more opportunity, I feel like, to create something. And it'll be a lot easier. I mean, as I don't want to say it's easy, though. It's not. But like, a lot more. It's not easy at all. Yeah, like, no, that's it, no. Everybody would be
accessible. It's more accessible.
I just feel like there's a lot more opportunity involved for people who can illustrate. And I highly recommend if you want to get into something now, like to go that route, and you can, you know, yeah, learn both.
Well, again, we appreciate you coming on and talking. It's a great conversation for us, and hopefully for, again, people who are in the same boat as where you were. Now, just to remind all the listeners, they can stay most up to date with what you've got going on don'tfeedthewolf.com if they become subscribers, correct?
If there's a... there's a little, I just set it up with like, you know, MailChimp kind of thing. If you set up there, I won't spam you. I'll probably send out one letter a week, if that, you know. Don'tfeedthewolf.com. You can sign up for my mailing list, which I haven't even really started building yet. But then facebook.com/don'tfeedthewolf or twitter.com/don'tfeedthewolf. And it's the L is a one. All of those, you know, I'm most actively promoting stuff on, probably, you know, the Facebook. But like once content's actually coming out, you'll see I'll be hitting everything strong. And I, yeah, I want to keep people up to date though on those emails. So I want to start getting that.
Well, great. We'll be looking out for your September release, as well as kind of that secret project.
Yeah, I can't wait to share that. Thanks again so much for having me on, you guys. It's been awesome.
No, we appreciate your time.
All right. Well, farewell, nerds.